Welcome to the Pickles and Bones podcast. I'm Josh House here with co-host Tom Schnagelsberger. We are coming to you live from All Hail the Biscuit, table 32 in the dining room, the empty dining room here on a Tuesday night. We just finished up our very first ever biscuit class for some of our backers from Kickstarter. So it was a really cool experience. Andy and I got to go through the biscuit making process and talk a little bit about how we got to that recipe, where it came from, and give everybody a chance to kind of make their own biscuits. So it was pretty cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. Were people engaged? Did you feel like that they were like picking up what you were teaching them?
Yeah, I think so. I think by the end, what everybody put out and got a chance to take home was, I mean, it was just as good as what we do every single day, I think. I mean, maybe, you know, it's something that takes practice, just like we talked about making barbecue. Like, the best way to make good barbecue is to make a lot of bad barbecue. It's kind of like making biscuits. The best way to figure out how to make a good biscuit is to make a lot of shitty biscuits first.
Well, just yesterday I made falafel.
I saw that.
Yeah.
I saw the IG.
It turned out great, but the first time that I tried frying it, it just completely disintegrated. So I just kind of mixed up some flour with it to try and bind it together a little bit, and by the second batch, it was 10 times better. So
that's crazy. Hard to
believe. Trial and error.
3 years ago, I would imagine you probably wouldn't have been able to do that.
Oh, no way.
So since the last podcast that we had, we were just talking about, was almost a year ago. Obviously, a lot of things have changed. One big change is Tom has taken over as catering director for Pickles and Bones, and eventually All Hail the Biscuit too, when we get to a point where we're ready to do catering out of here. So congratulations to Tom. He's been consistently outperforming what we've done over the past couple years, so we're really excited to have him in that position. How do you feel like your role's changed with us since that happened?
I definitely feel like I'm more of a leader, I'd say. Just helping people like understand why we do what we do and things like that, and really just like trying to think ahead a little bit more too is something that I didn't have to do as much when I didn't have that title, but I feel a little bit more responsible for everything that goes on with catering now. So
yeah, what even though it hasn't been an extended amount of time from this time last year when you were still doing some catering stuff, but not as involved, do you feel like the catering business and catering opportunities are starting to come back around, that we're starting to see more stuff that we weren't seeing last year, whether that's graduation parties or more weddings, like coming out of the COVID time period where that had canceled a lot of stuff?
Yeah, definitely more weddings. I'd say the grad parties seem about the same as last year, but I think that's such a like a one-time thing, and it has to happen when people graduate, so people still did that, but definitely a lot more office parties too.
Yeah, that was one thing that really got a lot of the corporate business in the middle of COVID was just destroyed for everybody. And, you know, knock on wood, we're lucky to be in a community with not so much corporate business, so we were lucky enough to not have to really worry about that. But there's a lot of businesses that really got crushed by a lack of corporate business. I mean, I think about like downtown Cincinnati.
Yeah.
Or Blue Ash, areas that were like based and built around like downtown population intensifying during the day for people going to work. Like, that stuff has just been crushed. And I'm curious to see how and if that ever rebounds.
I think it depends, because some people are going to adjust or did adjust and were able to float on through COVID to the point where they could go back to regular operation at this point.
Yeah.
But places that had been around forever, like Parker's and stuff like that,
yeah,
and
true.
It's just couldn't get past it.
No, they definitely fell victim to that. So obviously something else big that's happened in the past year was we opened this new restaurant that we're sitting in right now. For anyone that doesn't know, we opened All Hail the Biscuit February 16th. about 13 months after we signed our loan papers to purchase this building. And just like everybody else who was trying to do anything over the last 2 years, everything was delayed. And, you know, we would have hoped that it would have, that we would have got to this point where we could have opened up sooner. But I think we opened up at the right time. It worked out. It worked out for us for the best. We have a really, really good, really strong team of people here and a really strong team of people at Pickles and Bones. And I think that that is a rarity in this day and age.
Definitely is.
Especially as we sit around and I hate to say complain, but you see people complain nonstop about nobody wants to work and we can't keep people and nobody shows up. And like, quite frankly, one thing that we've tried to always stress is like, that doesn't matter. Like we have to focus on what we can do.
Right.
And sitting around and complaining about it sure as shit isn't going to solve the problem.
And we all had to deal with it. There wasn't a business or anywhere, I don't think, that wasn't affected in some way by it. So using that as an excuse is kind of a cop out.
Yeah, yeah. It is. And I think we've gone through. So opening a brand new restaurant from the ground up, from starting from the pop-up to you know, multiple pop-ups and like learning during that, and then rolling into like the Kickstarter and going through the process of like getting a loan and how that's going to work and trying to order equipment and waiting on delays for this, and how do you talk to who do you have to talk to get stuff in order? Like, do you need to talk to an architect? Do you need to talk to zoning? Like, we learned a ton of stuff through that process. I don't think that there's anything that can prepare you for like actually just opening up.
Yeah. Sometimes you just gotta jump in.
Yeah. And I don't think we knew. We didn't really know what to expect. You know, one thing we always talked about is like, we're going to come through and we're going to have a plan for everything. And then we're going to open up and then we're going to realize 25 things that we never had a plan for.
And I'm sure you did.
Yeah, we did. Yeah. At least. It's so many that I can't even think of them now.
Yeah.
But I know that there was a lot of time in that first month or 2 months where it was like, oh shit, we got to buy more of this. Oh, we need to get more of that. Oh, we got way too many of this. Or we purchased stuff or had something here that we don't even use now. It's not,
yeah.
It's not even involved. It's hidden down in the basement.
I've seen some of that stuff.
Yeah. There's quite a bit down there. We're putting a collection down there, but it's been an awesome, you know, learning opportunity, and it's been great to see people grow and shine. I think it brings the best out of people when they're put in a difficult situation. And I think one thing that it helped out for the people that were here from the beginning to now, which is almost all of the people are still here.
Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah, when you go through like that like tough situation like that, it really like brings everybody together.
It does, yeah. Common enemy.
Yeah. And we, you know, we're still learning kind of the way to manage, you know, no matter what I try to do, I can't be two places at once, which is why we spent so much time the last year and a half at Pickles and Bones, like putting ourselves in a position where it doesn't matter whether or not I'm there. And then I find myself at the same time, like happy and proud, but sometimes I come over there and I'm like, they don't even need me. Like, it's probably better if I'm not here. So it's a weird,
yeah,
it's a weird situation and a weird like dynamic for me personally to try to figure out what my new role is.
Yeah.
And I know you and I have talked about just like how are we communicating with each other? How do we find that like that new balance?
Yeah, there's definitely a learning curve that came with it, and just talking at the end of the day was really what ended up being a big catalyst for that. Like, whether it be with Josh or the kitchen manager over at Pickles and Bones, or the service manager there, like just communicating and seeing like where we maybe could have done something better or where one of us messed up. And it's been a learning curve, but I feel like we're starting to get grips. And I wondered if it felt like that, like if you were walking in and it was like, felt weird because you've been out of it, you know, a little bit,
yeah,
at least. And you almost feel like a stranger.
Yeah,
I guess.
Yeah. I mean, definitely has that, like, has that feeling. And I think that like you strive to build, a business that's strong enough to operate without you, but nobody can prepare you for what that feels like. And like I said, you can be extremely proud, and I'm extremely proud of like what's going on. But I feel like it's kind of like when your kids, my guess is going to be like my feeling when my daughter goes off to college or is living on her own, like, she doesn't need me anymore? Like, what am I? So I've had a hard time figuring out, like, what to do for myself. And some of it is just level of pressure that I put on myself,
for sure,
that nobody else can do anything to alleviate or make any different. And then another part of it is just communication, which when you're a husband and wife that own and operate businesses, and then you go home, you know, to the same house, and we have three kids, and we're always running nonstop. Like tonight for the biscuit class, I thought Nicole's doing it. Last night, she was like, actually, it wasn't last night. It was this morning. I was like, well, I'll be running the kids around, so Andy will be there to help you. She's like, I thought you were doing it. I'm like, she's like, you think we should probably talk about some of this stuff? I'm like, I thought we did, but some of the stuff I think we've talked about in the passing or talked about in passing, and clearly we never have. So communication, I think, is like the overwhelming theme for like how we continue to grow in this, like, because I mean this restaurant is like still a baby.
Yeah,
so it doesn't
how long
even
has it been? Does, 3 months.
Yeah, going a little over. Yeah, 3 months yesterday.
Oh, nice.
That we opened. I mean, that's nothing.
Yeah.
You know, I think we've barely scratched the surface on what we're going to be able to do. We have a full team of people now in the kitchen, which we hadn't had up until now. Basically, not for the most part, it was me, Andy, and Shannon.
Right.
Every day. I mean, Shannon has made 99% of the biscuits that have come out of here in the last 3 months.
That's a lot, I'm sure.
Yeah. And it was cool to see. So Shannon doesn't have any like professional kitchen experience.
Right.
But she's super smart, and she's brought a lot of like ideas to the fray that like Andy or myself or Nicole may not have thought of, because our only background is kitchen stuff.
It's true. Yeah, that kind of puts you in a box sometimes when you think the same way and have been trained to think that way, and
right,
you get a fresh perspective sometimes, and that can help a lot.
Yeah, I think it's what like holds. I think it's what holds the restaurant industry back a lot, is that restaurant people think too much like restaurant people.
Yeah,
and a lot of times it slows down or prevents growth because they don't have enough business sense to think of like the fact that you're operating a business that has to, like, your responsibility is to make a profit at the end of the day. And because if not, you can't keep your business open, and you're not going to be able to keep any of your team on board.
Right. Yeah.
So I think people forget about that, or on top of that also, you know, the restaurant industry is notoriously slow to adapt to new technology.
Yeah.
And I think that there's a fear, like a stupid fear of like a simple minded fear of like, oh no, the robots are gonna take over. Like,
I think we're further away from that than we realize too.
I think
at least with automation.
I think that the bigger places, we're between a Taco Bell and a Kentucky Fried Chicken, they're probably pretty close, I would imagine,
Yeah, McDonald's has been testing with like burger flipping machines and things like that.
I've been listening to a lot of stuff about robotics, and I find it less intimidating and less first off, I don't find it threatening because I don't think that like a robot can replace hospitality.
No,
which is what we strive for.
That's the one thing about that food is that there's no like real love or soul that goes into that kind of food. It's just all, you know, copy and paste. So,
well, that's a lot of the,
it's easy to do that.
Yeah. And a lot of what I was listening to is I'm talking about like the automation to replace it. You're talking about replacing jobs that people don't want.
Right.
To stand in front of, you know, talking about like standing in front of the deep fryer for 8 hours straight, getting covered in grease, getting burned, like, and going and checking on something else and not pulling a basket up and burning everything that's inside of it. Like, so I think there's a lot of advantages, but that's a whole other podcast for another time. But I just think that those are the types of things that like the box, like you were talking about, that limits the restaurant industry from like, for us being like slow adapters. And I'm as guilty of it as anybody else. Some of the stuff though, you know, like we tried a delivery through, partnered with DoorDash through Toast at Pickles and Bones. And I would think overall, we don't like it.
Yeah, there's been some hiccups. I think that our food isn't really meant to be just handled by other people.
Yeah. And,
which is originally why we didn't want to do it in the first place.
Right.
But, I mean, we gave it a shot. It was sort of popular, but not really enough to that we felt like we were missing out if we don't do it. Like, I think that those people will still come and pick up the food because it's good food and it's worth driving to come get. But
yeah, and it gives us an opportunity to do what we do. That is our unique selling proposition, is like a hospitality,
right? And it takes that part out of it.
It does. Yeah. It ends up with like somebody who could be driving around in their car, smoking cigarettes and whatever else, and getting out and dropping our food off and drop kicking it to the front door. And I just think that the cons outweigh the pros.
Yeah.
So, you know, we gave it a shot. I don't know. I'm not saying that we'd never do it again, but I think for right now, I think we're done with delivery. I don't think it's essential for, I think depending on the market that you're in, I think it's essential that you do.
Yeah.
I think if you're in a downtown, I think if you're in a more urban area, I think you have to be on.
Yeah.
I think you have to be.
Especially somewhere with a lot of like workspaces and stuff like that. And it's just.
Yeah. I would be way more open to doing like a ghost kitchen of some kind to test out a concept.
Yeah. I'd love to do that.
My only fear with that is if you use the ghost kitchen idea to test out the concept, can you ever really take it back from the ghost kitchen? Can you ever take it back from, I think you have to build it from the very beginning with the right price point so that you can absorb the cost of delivery.
Yeah.
So I think if, let's say we were going to do, theoretically, we're going to do a pizza place as a ghost kitchen.
Right.
I think you have to build that pizza price 30% higher than what you think it would be, so that you can absorb the 30% delivery charge.
Yeah.
From the companies.
And also it would be difficult to, I mean, you'd have to either brand it together with the existing restaurant if you wanted it to all be a part of each other someday. Because if you branded it separately and then decided you wanted it to be an in-house thing.
No, what I'm thinking is like, if you, let's say we had Tom's Pizza,
yeah,
and then Tom's Pizza's killing it on DoorDash, But now we want to open up a brick and mortar that's just for Tom's Pizza.
Oh, okay.
And we're like, oh, we don't do DoorDash anymore.
Yeah,
I don't think you could ever do
it. I see what you're saying.
I don't think you could ever take it back.
Yeah.
That's the only thing. I think most of those ghost kitchen brands are built to just stay delivery only forever.
Yeah.
Which maybe that's, I mean, maybe that's the move.
A lot of them seem to be like cheap knockoff versions of the existing restaurant. Like I ordered something from Cosmic Wings and I was kind of excited about it. And they got there and I was like, I've had these before, and I looked into it, and it's from Applebee's. Like, and you're not even, I don't know, you're not getting anything extra special out of that. Not saying that that's how ours would be, but yeah. That's just, it seems to be a lot of the ghost kitchens are just like half-assed.
Yeah.
Almost.
Yeah. I'm sure they are.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of people a year ago, that's all everybody was talking about.
Yeah.
Was ghost kitchen this and ghost kitchen that. And I think if it's an extension, like for Cali Barbecue, like they're doing ghost kitchens,
yeah.
Other ghost kitchens around the San Diego area because they want to be the Amazon Prime of barbecue. And that makes sense to me if you have a brand that's already established. They're like, well, I can't come... I'm in Los Angeles. I can't come to San Diego and get that barbecue. But I know I love that brand. Oh shit! They opened up I can get it on delivery now.
Yeah.
From this hub, whatever it is. I think there's potential there for that. I think that's a lot more interesting than.
Yeah. Who knows? Maybe we could do something closer to the city sometime and try and get barbecue all over the place. But
maybe I think. It's possible. I think that's more interesting than like trying to come up with like a watered down brand.
Yeah.
Because if we were going to try like another, if we were going to try a pizza concept or something like that, I would just, I mean, we have two businesses. I would just run a pop-up and try that because yeah. I still think that you lose a hospitality.
Yeah, you definitely do. That's... You'd be growing your brand, but at what cost? Like,
right.
If your whole brand is built off of making good connections with your customers or guests, and then you just suddenly forget that and just start sending food out. Like,
yeah.
That's a good point.
Because at the end of the day, the person that's going to be delivering that doesn't work for you. So you don't have a lot. You really have no control once it leaves your door.
Yeah.
At least if it's somebody that works for you. But that's a whole nother giant potential. Another giant potential nightmare to try to.
I mean, you don't almost have to start your own delivery service to do something like that, which is possible.
Yeah, but. It is. I think the idea of like the I think like the ideas of like the co-op delivery services, like for a specific area, like if we co-op delivery with like us, the governor, you know, 20 bricks, something like that. We're like, hey, let's all bond together and we'll hire some delivery drivers together. I think that's a potential idea that could really like be disruptive to the status quo for the delivery services.
I think we could all agree that DoorDash is just terrible.
Yeah, and we all agree we don't like any of them.
We use it because we want food delivered, and it's the best option we have. But right. If Amazon were to do it better tomorrow, everyone would use Amazon.
Yeah, I think eventually one of those companies is going to have to win.
Yeah,
I mean, we in this area specifically, we don't have a lot of. I don't even know. Does Uber Eats deliver out here?
I think they do. I've gotten Uber Eats out in Owensville before, all so right. I actually can't get DoorDash, but I can get Uber Eats.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. So I know if you go to like some of the bigger cities, like they've got multiple brands that do delivery that we don't have here. Postmates, Caviar, Uber Eats, to name a few. So I think eventually one of those, ultimately probably Amazon will find a way to do it the best and.
Like everything else.
And take it over.
I'm still waiting on Amazon to start taking over gas stations and things like that. And
you and me both.
It'd be a better world, honestly.
Maybe if they just delivered the gas, that'd be better. It would be less painful.
True.
They just delivered the gas to our house and filled our car up.
They'll do it for a dollar cheaper, too.
Come to our house and fill up our car for $90 at our house instead of having to drive to the gas station and do it. Yeah, it could work. What else? What other kind of things have changed in the space from going to like being one restaurant to two restaurants that you can think of?
We already talked about it, but I think the biggest thing is just the lack of seeing each other every single day and adjusting to that. Really, that was the biggest challenge, and still is a little bit. But we've figured out mostly just calling each other, and I just started whenever I have something to tell either you or Nicole, I just started calling you guys right away instead of just waiting till the next time I saw you.
Yeah.
So I think that's just I forget, you know, it'll slip right by me by the time I see you again, and so.
Yeah.
And not like it's that long. It's a day or two, but moves fast sometimes.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah, for sure.
Trying to figure out scheduling and hiring new people, which is something that you and Nicole always took control of for the most part. I mean, you asked for our input and stuff like that, but actually training people and making sure that they're following our standards, mostly.
Well, you went from being responsible for, you went from being responsible to for your whatever station you're working on or whatever you're doing to now training other people to do what you were doing.
Yeah.
So it's a different level of responsibility.
Yeah.
To try to teach people. And when you have people who are high achievers, like yourself that want to do a good job, you will put the necessary amount of pressure on yourself to teach that person how to do it.
Definitely almost too much sometimes.
Yeah. and then our job, I think, is to figure out what everybody else needs to be successful.
Yeah.
And into get everybody on the same page that it's not a asking for help is not a sign of weakness, it's a sign of strength.
Yeah, for sure.
People too often associate asking help with oh, that's weakness. That's weak. No, actually, if you're strong enough to be look, I need help in this situation.
Yeah.
That's much more a sign of strength.
Yeah. I agree. I think it's something even the last 2 weeks that I've been doing a little bit better at, and it's been on my mind a lot lately. So
yeah.
And I know Mike and Cassie as well, because we've all been talking about it. And
yeah.
It's just something that we recently realized we got to do better. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we have to try to coax out the, hey, I need help with this. Okay. That's what we're here to do, is help you.
For sure.
Yeah, I think, it's a hard thing. It's a hard thing to... everybody has a hard time asking for help, especially people that are high achievers.
Yeah.
You either have one of two extremes. You have the person who never wants to ask for help because they're a high achiever, or if they're a low achiever, then they ask for help all the time when they don't need it.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like a situation where people cry wolf, and then that's the other extreme that you don't want to have either.
I'm always I don't want to be the person that's constantly asking for help when he doesn't need it and stuff like that. But, I think people that aren't that way don't worry about it.
That makes sense?
Yeah, no, they don't. Okay.
They don't.
Right.
And I think everybody's had to take a step back and try to prioritize what it is that they need to make sure that they accomplish.
Yeah.
And now hey, you don't have to do all of this stuff by yourself. There's other people here to help get the job done that are here to support each other. And you have core responsibilities within your job that have to get done. So make those a priority.
Yeah. I was feeling guilty for leaving the line or not doing prep or something like that when I had to go and talk to a catering client or write an agreement for a client or even leaving the kitchen for a couple hours. Sometimes I feel rushed to get back to the kitchen, but nine times out of 10, when I get back, everyone's just like, hey, you know, yeah. Like nothing's wrong. It's just, but in my mind, I'm thinking like, oh, I need to help these guys, but yeah, they got it.
Yeah. Well, part of your job is doing all those agreements, is talking to the clients, is talking to the guests. Like, you are helping everybody else by doing that, because true. For us generating any business generating repeat guests, repeat business, yeah. is the key for long-term success. Everybody can go out and wow somebody one time. Can you get them to come back? Can you make a lasting impression where they want to make sure that every time all three of their kids graduate, that they get food from us?
Yeah, that, for sure.
All time, both their kids get married, they want to make sure that Pickles and Bones caters the reception, yeah. or caters
that's
the rehearsal
for
dinner.
Sure. Yeah. I get so excited when I get a return customer, because I pride myself on remembering that person right off the bat. Like today we got a phone call and he's like, hey, you probably don't even remember, but last summer we did this thing, and I was like, oh, it's Kevin, right? Yeah. For the golf outing. He's like, yeah, that's exactly. And I was like, of course I remember, because, you know, I try and take one thing to like lock away about a certain catering. Mm. And so when I see that person again, I kind of associate them with that one thing. And they were a golf outing way out in the middle of nowhere. That one's easy, you know?
Right. But I mean, that's the stuff that really makes a difference and can set us apart from everybody else. You know, there's one of my old bosses, the saying, like, there's not enough business for everybody, but there's enough business for us. And like our responsibility is to make sure that we go after that and take care of those people every single time. And like, we have to deliver our end of the bargain every single time.
Yeah. If you're not getting people back through your door multiple times, that's not because of the people ever.
Right.
Maybe every once in a while, but a rare occasion.
It's not them.
Right. They're coming back because you did a good job.
Yeah. Everybody, thanks for listening to the Pickles and Bones podcast, and tune in next time.